Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Scanning the Frequencies radio show on LiveParanormal.com. Without further ado, I shall bring on one of the lovely hostesses of the show. I will bring on Lisa Terrio.
Hi, Nikki.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, tonight we got a pretty special show because we're going to have Hank Harrison. Now, I know that everybody knows him as Courtney Love's father, but he's a lot more than that.
Right.
He has actually a degree in psychology. He's an author. He's a publisher. And he used to manage the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
So isn't that cool?
Whoa.
Yeah. And
wow.
And he's got a new book out. And he's got a new book out called The Assassination of Kurt Cobain. And he's going to tell us a little bit about himself, his background.
Yes.
And then he is going to eventually talk about the book, you know, and what came to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nobody knows, everybody just knows him as that, like Courtney's dad, but he's a lot more than that. So, you know, we figured bring him on. I mean, he's in good support of the petition with us, and I'm proud to say we have 25,200 signatures, and, you know, and plus probably by the time, you know, the end of the day, but so things are going pretty good to try to get the case reopened, and maybe they'll listen.
Definitely.
You know, Dawn's not here yet. Hey, Dawn,
what a great
guest.
Dawn is here. I'm going to go ahead and bring her in now. I'm going to go ahead and bring her in right now. Here we go. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dawn.
Hello.
So are you excited?
Can you hear me?
I think Hank will be calling in about, I don't know, a couple minutes, about 3 minutes or so. He should be calling in, and we can get the show started. I'm kind of excited because a lot of people, like I said, don't know him, like the way, you know, for other things besides the important dad. You know what I mean? And he's got a lot of attributes about him. I mean, a publisher and an author and a degree in psychology. And so when you really think about it, he's got a lot to say, you know? And this is another angle at everything. So how was your week?
Oh, it was okay.
Dawn?
It was yours.
Yeah.
How was your week?
Chaos. I have six dogs. I have
Yeah.
It's chaos.
That about takes up all of it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's complete.
Yep, I'm moving, so mine's...
It turned out pretty good. I mean, you know, so far, since yesterday, it was all right. You know, and
that's
because
good.
Life just changes when you drop a bit. You just
that's
you know how
right.
it goes. I know you're moving. You've got a big change coming for yourself. So.
Yep, I haven't stopped running.
I'm
a little scatterbrained, so please forgive me.
Mm-mm. No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm sitting here, so if you don't
I'm
hear my
forward to you.
Herself, she's sitting next to me looking
Miss
at herself.
Stinky
I'm like, so funny. This thing goes, of course, she's got to be right next to me when I do anything. So she's, like, right here. She made herself all comfy on the bed with me so that she can hang out. This is my safe room, so it's quiet. You know?
Very cool.
Otherwise, Matt, I know we're going to get back into investigating again, you and I, you know, once you get settled in a little bit.
Yes,
get back
please.
Out there and start doing things and start researching and more. I mean, I've been running the box a lot, you know.
You have or you haven't?
Oh, I have. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Mikey does too. Mikey does it with me sometimes. But usually I'll just put it on while, you know me, I'll leave it on while I'm doing stuff in the house because I can't help but
anything interesting?
In the they're funny.
Anything interesting?
No. I don't know. I gotta go back and listen to it. Yeah, the other one I did record, I'm going to put up. I recorded two sessions. I'm going to put them on YouTube. So, you know what I mean? I just haven't done it yet because I want to go back and review them first in case I catch anything, like, important that I have to make note of. You know, and then I'll slap them on YouTube and then let people listen to them. They can figure it out. you know. They could figure it out. All I know is Mikey was upstairs, and there was all Mikey. Every 5 minutes on the last one. Mikey. I'm like, he's upstairs. Mikey. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, I know. We were at your house, remember? He was Mike. How about the time we heard Mikey's voice come through?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Oh, my God. That was crazy. Yeah, remember? That was funny, though. The idea was he was asleep at home. So that just opens up a whole array of what our subconscious is capable of doing, you know what I mean, when we're asleep. Because
well, explain to
him,
people what happened so they know what
well,
you're talking
about. Well, yeah, we heard him. We were running the box doing a session trying to research, and we heard his voice come
at
through.
At my like, house.
Dawn? Dawn? He didn't even say mom. He said, Dawn? And we're like, my God. And they said, it's Mikey. And then I remember we had to tell him to go back to sleep. But he was asleep, but we don't, you know what I mean, go back to sleep. It was pretty weird to hear his voice come out of the box. When
right,
because
Mikey wasn't with us. Mikey was at your house and you were at mine.
Yep. Yeah, and I was in Jersey.
And Mikey's her son, who was
yep,
asleep.
He was in pension. Yep. And you know what?
Yeah,
he
that was
to
interesting.
Come, remember? he
yeah.
To come, please. So I guess when he was dreaming, he decided to pay
well,
a visit.
Subconsciously, I guess he did. You know, mm-hmm. Astral travel there, maybe.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, and you know that's
very
the whole
open.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, oh, he is. He's just like a walking ball of creativity. Is what he is, you know. But I hope
he's an amazing kid.
Calling in any minute, huh?
I say he's an amazing kid.
Yeah, he is. He's talented. He drives me crazy because he's a teenager. Like his new haircut.
Yeah.
Well, ladies.
Yes.
Hank is on
yes.
the line. So if you'd like,
oh,
I can go
awesome.
Ahead and
excellent.
Live. All right.
Oh,
thank you,
Nikki. In now. No problem.
Thank
here,
you.
Hank.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, Hank. Hi, how are you? It's Lisa.
Excellent.
And this is Dawn on the other end.
Hi, Hank.
Hi, Dawn.
Hank, we just gave you kind of an introduction before you got on, and I want to start by saying thank you very much for coming on the show. And I
wow.
would love you to just tell a little bit about yourself first, about your background.
Okay, thank you. Well, I had to write this book about Kurt because it was driving me nuts for 20 years. So I brought to bear on the topic, I have a couple of degrees in psychology. I started the first LSD rescue project. I went to Europe and went to school over there after I got my master's degree at San Francisco State. I started a thing called LSD Rescue over there in London and also Vancouver and Minneapolis. So a lot of my techniques for bringing people down off of bad acid trips got transferred around the country and around the world. And I was kind of flattered by that, but I got bored with it because I wanted to learn how to write to a different degree. I wrote several books that were popular, but they weren't the kind of things that were really expressing what I was really trying to say. And I got two bestsellers out of the first style, and I went to London and I studied under a woman named Frances Yates, Dame Frances Yates, who is a very famous historian, and wow, it changed me around completely, and I learned how to write better, but now
oh,
nobody
wow.
can understand me. Nobody can understand me now.
Now you're above
it. If you want to read the old Hank Harrison, who wrote a lot like a guy named Nelson Algren or Jack Kerouac or any, you know, the old hippie bohemian
yes.
beatnik school of writing, then you read the earlier books. And now if you want to read what I'm like now, you can read this new book on Cobain. Unfortunately, I had to rein myself in. Or the books
oh,
on
I
the
know.
Holy Grail. I'm working on the Holy Grail and King Arthur and the Round Table. Really into archaeology and anthropology and trying to discover who King Arthur was and that kind of stuff. So it's been
oh,
a long, you know, I had to rein myself in to write this book.
Yes.
So, you know,
what,
I'm sick and
like,
tired of shrinking heads.
Listen, I know. And, you know, of what inspired you? I mean, like, I know that you've been through the ringer through this, too. You know what I mean? And the whole 20 years, 20-plus years now. And this is a very good thing. People don't understand that this book, okay, I mean, it's worth a read. They should read it, okay, because you've got a different aspect of everything. It comes from you, and I know, you know, you have a lot more to offer than what people hear. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
everything
you know,
that you just said.
Well, the Halpert and Wallace wrote a book that was kind of more like a journalist's view, criminology, and you know, my book is more like a shrink writing a book. So if you, you know, if you, but a stoned, pot smoking, acid head shrink writing a book. So it's a little bit off the beaten path. I used to manage the Grateful Dead, so I didn't get by that unscathed.
No, I listen to Pierre Robert and WMM all the time, and every day he says, God bless the Grateful Dead, okay? That's the one thing I know. Yeah, I know.
There you go.
It can hold, it holds with you.
Well, imagine, if you will, the bass player from the Grateful Dead saying, hey, Jerry Garcia wants me to come down and try out and maybe join his band. And I said, and he says, it was Phil Lesh, the bass player. And he says, and he was my roommate at the time, and he says, do you want to come with me? I said, oh, sure, why not? So we went down to Magoo's at Palo Alto, and we never came back.
Oh, my God. That's that's kind of cool.
That was 65. That was May. That was like February of 65, and we never came back. I don't know where that is anymore. And it just changed everybody's life, just the whole direction. Everything just went tangential, completely out of, holy shit, you know. Ken was there, Jerry was there, Bobby was there, everybody was there in that little pizza parlor that day in Menlo Park. So, yeah, that's where it all started. And I dropped everything I was doing. I dropped everything I was doing. I said, okay, what do you want me to do? And he says, well, we need some guy in a seersucker suit that likes to wear ties and carries a briefcase. We need a guy like you to look straight. So when I dressed kind of straight. I was stoned, but I was straight, you know. And they were all kind of hippies, and they were kind of beatniky, and had long hair and Beatles haircuts. So I sort of managed them for about 6 months back in those days, and then Courtney was born, and I was having trouble with my mother-in-law and father-in-law, Courtney's adopted parents, you know. And they were saying, oh, no, too much acid. No, you know, no, you're going to give her acid. Oh, no, we don't want you around her. And in addition to that, I'm a Buddhist. And they were Roman Catholics, heavy Roman Catholics. And Oh, that wasn't good.
Oh, boy.
That's where that whole they were really, 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 really wealthy, really, really rich. And, I mean, they owned half the town. So, and that was San Francisco in those days. So, you know, the Aliotos, all the wealthy Catholic families, you know. So I worked myself in, and then after a while I decided, I better go off. And I said to my wife, hey, let's get a divorce. And we went back east first and did some stuff, and it's in the book. And we came back.
Yeah.
So then I said, let's get a divorce and we'll call it even. But let me see the kid. And she said, sure, you can see the kid anytime. I said, fine, I want to see her every week. I said, fine. And then as soon as I signed the papers, no more kid.
Oh, my God.
They took off with the kid.
Oh.
And that was where they took off. They took off to Oregon, and then they took off to New Zealand. I didn't know that at the time, I almost had a nervous breakdown because I loved that little child a lot.
Yeah.
And then later on, 20 years later, 10, 15 years later, people are saying, hey, you gave her acid, man. No. I was bringing people down off of bad acid trips, but I wouldn't give a child acid. So Courtney decided she'd capitalize on it. After the Kurt Cobain thing, and she started spreading the word around that I gave her acid when she was a kid to make it look like it was my fault that Kurt died. You know what I mean? So really, really pissed me off.
That's what got me started.
You know, that's what got me started.
What would that have to do with Kurt Cobain's death?
Well, yeah, because she went ahead and had him, you know, there was an assassination there, you know what I mean? Kirk's dead.
I know.
Okay,
right.
So, yep. so my point is, you know, she had to have a scapegoat, and she wanted to get rid of me because she knew I knew what the hell went on.
Yeah. Mm.
Because she actually did live with us for a while when she was an adult. I left off part of the story because after her mom kicked her out, she came to live with me in Ireland, and she came to live with me in the Sausalito, and she came to live with me after we got back from Ireland. I had a new girlfriend at the time, who she called the Goat Lady. And so there was a lot of this stuff, but she was going around telling us, oh, I'm going to kill myself a rock star someday. And this is way before she met Kurt. And, she wrote it down, and she wrote it in her journals, and yeah. I got the book, and I have the poems. And we're bringing out a poetry book of her poetry pretty soon, too, by the way, called The Lost Poems. And in that book, you'll see in her handwriting, you'll see what she really had in her head at the time. So,
money.
That's more. That can say more about what happened in her head than I could ever tell you. And you'll believe it if you read it in her handwriting. So I figured we better put this book out too. And it's because she left this poetry behind in the living room, in the fireplace. She threw it all away. She'd move and she'd leave stuff on the bed and stuff. And I'd say, do you want that? She'd say, no, throw it away. And so I would keep it. And I accumulated over years about 150, 200 poems and lyrics and sound sheets and all kinds of drawings and explanations of what kind of band she was going to build. She always wanted to have a band. And at the same time, this was after her mother threw her in juvie.
Oh, yeah. Yep. What was that
you
for?
You know. Oh, she wouldn't behave, and she didn't want to be Catholic.
Oh, the
incorrigibility, generally.
That's it.
But when she got in there, after she went through the system, she got raped or beat up a lot of times.
Oh, no.
And she was a street kid a lot of the time in Portland, and got kicked around a lot. And that pissed me off because I could have raised her in a better job. Another thing I'd like to point out to your audience before we get too far into this interview is that I'm almost 80 years old now.
No, you don't sound it, but okay.
I know. Yep. See, because I kept my head because I don't drink, I don't smoke, I'm fat.
Yep.
But, you know, she always called me bad because I was fat. But the truth is. you know, talking to me, you hear my voice, you can tell I'm not 80, but I am 80. So, you know, I have the wisdom of being 80. I live this long. I'm 78, and I'll be 80 in a couple years. But my doctor tells me I'm going to live to be about 100. So I get I get to see all of the what happens, the end of the – I get to see the end of the trail. And
yes.
It's definitely coming. Even talking to you people on the phone right now is cool for me because I get to see what happened to Tom Grant. Tom Grant put me down. Tom Grant's the detective that investigated the murder, and Courtney hired Tom Grant to be a bodyguard. That kind of stuff. I get to see what all these people did, and I get the last laugh. It's kind of funny. It's sarcastic, but I hope you don't mind me
because
getting
you're
the last
playing.
Laugh out of this.
You're not playing a game. That's why it's not.
I'm still strong enough to punch somebody out if I have to.
That's right. Yep. And you should be proud about.
I'm not inclined to violence.
Yeah,
probably
but
mean.
Of what
anyway, so what else can I do for you? That's the end of my rap about Ganesi.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about the book and what people to expect in the book that you wrote. Like, what are they going to?
Well, I just—it's pretty much covers what I just went over. You know, that kind of background, the first couple of pages, and that part's pretty boring. Then towards the end, what happened was there's a key point. Is that Courtney came to live with us for a while in Ireland, and I got to see her change over to a violent kind of nasty, almost completely sociopathic personality where she would actually do really bad things to people. And I saw, when I heard Dirk was dead, I suspected right then, I hadn't seen her for, you know, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen her since 83 or 80. And then here come years, I hadn't seen her. And she married, and I knew who he was. And I followed their career. I mean, you couldn't miss it. They were on TV and radio.
Oh, I know. I know.
And I'm very proud of her. And suddenly, I started to see a darker cloud.
Yeah.
For
What do you think that changed? I mean, there was such a change. I mean, I know that if she was, like you said, raped, even if it was 20 years or 15 years before, that could have kicked in, too. But the sociopath...
It did. Yeah, but see, the thing, what changed was that Kurt wised up. Cobain got wind of what the fuck was going on and said, hey, I'm going to dump your ass. And I don't want to be around some, you know, because she was cheating on him right and left with men and women and goats and who knows what. And backstage, you know.
Kurt
was a kind of a country kid from a lower middle class community of Christians in Aberdeen, Washington. And he was actually a very sincere Christian, and he prayed. And when he married Courtney, even though he was a bit of a wacko, when he married her, he took a vow of marriage, and he wanted to keep it. All he wanted to do was play music and fulfill his destiny. And Courtney was out there doing stuff with Billy Corgan and smashing.
I remember
whatever.
That.
So there's lots of people out there that know the true story. And then I hear stories about Courtney jumping in and beating up Mary Lou Lord. I happen to know, because I like Mary Lou's music, before Kurt died.
Right.
She had a contract with Sony Records. And she had a couple of semi-underground hit songs that were really good. She's really good, you know. And Courtney was never really as good as Mary Lou Lord, you know, in my mind. And she's my own daughter, but people say, well, how could you say it about your daughter? Hey, man, I'm an old hippie, man. I can say what I want to say. I'm an old San Francisco Royal beatnik from the old days. I get to say what I want to say. I knew Janis Joplin intimately. I knew Janis Joplin very, very well. I knew Jerry Garcia. I knew all those people very, very well. So when I hear music, blues, whatever, I know who the musicians are, even though I'm not a musician myself. And I know who the good ones are, and I know who the bad ones are. And Courtney was kind of, okay. I didn't like punk. I never liked punk music anyway. Grunge is pretty good, but I never liked. So whenever I found out that she was going to dump on Kurt, and a friend of mine who was a younger person says, you got to listen to this, man. And Nevermind came out, and I listened. I said, Jesus Christ, good. This is just three guys? Well, Nirvana was just three guys.
Yep.
And I said, holy mackerel, that's, you know, so I better give it a listen. So I listened and I listened and I started to hear, and I listened to Tourette's and I listened to stuff. And I said, this guy's gone, you know. And I found out he was hanging out with Burroughs, the poet Burroughs. This guy's a beatnik. This guy's like me. He wants to be a hippie. He wants to be a beatnik. Not a hippie, a beatnik, you know, a real bohemian.
Yeah.
And I said, gee whiz, that's cool.
Right.
Yeah, but he was like a king.
Yep.
He was like a prince of bohemians. And even his new generation, and he was elevating all those kids that were, like, listening to him to, I said, this guy is uniting the generations.
Yes.
So all the alienation that's been exploited between my generation and his generation by people who are in the middle, like David Geffen and all the heavy assholes right. in the middle, were exploiting the hell out of Kurt and his generation. And I'm going, Kurt is going to make the gap, bridge the gap. And I knew
I
so in the back of my head, I thought to myself, listen to this, you'll love this. I actually thought they were going to pull up in the driveway in a limo someday and let me see the baby. I actually thought,
we're
hippies, we're beat, let's smoke a joint, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
it never happened.
About it. I know.
It never happened.
I know.
It never happened.
I know that. What about, you were friends with Leland, Kurt's grandpa, right?
No,
I met him once.
I talked to him on the phone a lot, and I wrote him a lot of letters, and he wrote me a couple of cards, Christmas cards, stuff like that. But I never got to know him personally.
I watched the videos. But I watched the videos where you could see his concern over everything. You know what I mean? My concern is, why does the police reports are my concern? those things are a mess.
Right.
No,
here's the story on the police report. Gary, Kurt's uncle.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Kurt's uncle. Okay. Got the police report, and I think I'm guessing at this because they never told me this. Tom Grant urged them, encouraged them to get the police report because in the state of Washington, you can, if you're a family member, relative or something, you can prove it. You get to see the police report. But the police report was interesting because the police report, according to Leland and several other people there in Aberdeen, in that area around Aberdeen, said that the police report said it wasn't just that there weren't any handprints on the shotgun. They had been wiped off. But there weren't any powder burns.
No,
on
I
Kurt's
know.
Hands. So Kurt never fired the gun.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I was thinking.
So somebody fired the gun and then laid it on his chest.
Yeah.
And you'd think that they would have fired the gun, put Kurt's hand around it to get some powder burns on his hand or something, but they didn't even think of that. They were a bunch of amateurs. Whoever did it was a real amateur job, you know, but they figured they'd get away with it because they had it covered.
Who saw the body?
No, I don't know anything about that. Don't even ask me.
I don't either. I think
nothing
I think
about
just,
that.
Like
I don't know nothing about
maybe.
That. No. That's hearsay.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that.
I don't know.
Courtney had a buddy who was the doctor, who was the medical examiner, and he was the first guy on the scene.
Yeah.
He was a rocker. And he went in there and said, "Hey, this guy's a suicide," and that was the end of it.
I remember standing there. My father, like he would be, I guess, a little older than you right now. My father cried and screamed at that TV and said, "No way can you rule a suicide." Oh, no, he started cursing. I can't even go that far. You know, and he started to cry.
Right.
And he said, "No."
Right
away. I mean, he was like, "Wait a minute, what?"
It was that way for most of the locals. And anybody that knew Kurt, and guys like Dylan Carlson, and people that knew Kurt personally, Hokanson, and guys that were playing with, who's a guy from Aberdeen, and you know, all the people that had worked with Kurt in the studio and stuff, they all knew it was bullshit.
I know, especially since the radio.
I don't understand. I don't understand how they.
Go ahead.
How did they get a ruling of suicide so quickly? Usually it takes
it
more than one
person. They needed to send a gun out for prints for 30 days, and they didn't get any anyway.
Because,
so,
I mean, it takes more than one person to... I'm saying it takes more than one person to rule.
No, it was more than that. He told his boss, and his boss made the ruling.
Oh.
But... The medical examiner died later of a suicidal jump off of a parapet of a side of a mountain in Switzerland.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, wow.
Read the book. It's all in there.
I didn't get to read the rest of it.
Let me tell you one more thing about the book. Let me tell you something else about the book. It took me 20 years to write it because I'm writing it in a kind of coded, veiled, smoky kind of environment. So that when you read it, you have to read it. You can't just rely on me. I don't tell you, hey, this guy did this, this guy did that. You have to do it yourself in your head. And I don't necessarily put the left foot first and the right foot. I put two left steps, two right steps, sort of like dancing. And you get screwed around by me. I have a tendency to play tricks on the reader. It's fun.
That makes people think for themselves, which is what people should be doing.
Right, but also, I'm showing off and I'm snobby and I can prove I can do it. And it's kind of like I'm superior to you, but don't take that seriously, because after you read this, you'll be superior to me. You know, that's sort of where I come from. So at the end of the book, by the time you get to the end of the book, you're going to say, Jesus Christ, this guy's a really good writer. But you're also going to say, Jesus Christ, Kurt didn't kill himself. So what I'm trying to say is Kurt was murdered. But how would you prove that? You can't prove it because everybody just crapped on all the evidence. So
Tom
Grant's put out a book and Halpern and Wallace put out two books and so forth. And there's all Courtney's books that she approved of and put out.
I know. And everything. And the movie. Both movies.
It's crazy. The only way to convince people that Kurt was murdered, Kurt was assassinated, is to let them decide like they're a jury. And you're arguing like an attorney. You're arguing like a district attorney. You're arguing to convince jury of what happened. Well, if you do that, you don't necessarily present all the information 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You have to present information 1, 7, 4, 3, 9, 11, 12, 4, 2, and so forth. You do it in a non-sequential order. You present the information to the public in a non-sequential order so they can link things up in their own mind.
And everybody knows, instead of being argumentative, which is what I've seen all along, I mean, I would like to just crawl under the thing because I know with the petition. I don't take it any further than a police report because you know what I mean. The fact of the matter is that what I've seen is a lot of gossip instead, and that's screwing things up too because then people will believe that. And it's like you said, and it goes fast.
Yeah.
And your book will show what
happened. So what I'm doing is there was one chapter in there called Payoff at the Paint Factory. It's about one of her girlfriends that turned out to be a very famous painter who happened to be there when Kurt died. She knows a lot of information. So what Courtney would do is she would all the people that were knew about the murder and knew about what really happened got paid off. Every single one of those people who wasn't really with Courtney. But every single one of those people that worked and followed orders from Courtney, are in the book one at a time.
Yes.
Callie's Golden Parachute is one of the chapters. Dogs in the Basement is another chapter about who was in the house when Kurt was murdered. Who was
I know. And I don't, that part, I mean, you know what I mean? That's a read.
Did you read
right
it?
There. No, not that, but I kind of know a little bit about this.
I thought you had read it. I gave you. I'm very angry with you because I gave you a couple of months to read it. You should have read it by now.
No, I know.
Anyway,
I know.
I want you to read the chapter called "Dogs in the Basement." It took me a long time to write it, and I wanted to write it so that people would know when Kurt died, there were a bunch of people in the house.
That's what I figured. So,
How would you not hear the gun go off, or how would you not know that? Of course, they know. They're hiding
it.
Well, yeah, that too. But they didn't know what was going on. The people in the house knew what was going on and did nothing to stop it.
No.
So, and now there's a whole bunch of people in that. Now, one of the people, for example, was a woman who was Macaulay Culkin's half-sister.
Right.
And she was a junkie, and she was hanging around with Callie and Renee Navarrete at the time. And
right.
What happened? They ran her off because she was freaking out. So, like, a few months later, after Kurt dies, she disappears. Seven or eight years later, she's 1990. You haven't read the book, obviously.
No.
In 1994, she takes off in 94. She disappears. She disappears into the woods in Oregon. And then the next thing you know, she winds up in Montana, dead on a slab. After rehabilitating herself completely and becoming a halfway house worker for a rehab center in Montana.
Oh.
And she's dead because she knew she was hiding from whoever was chasing her.
Yes.
And she knew who killed Kurt. And the next thing you know, she winds up dead of an overdose in Missoula, Montana. Okay. So that's in the book. There's a lot of stuff in the book.
That's terrible.
That nobody else has put in any book. And
how
I
come?
Think that's why
question.
The book is worth looking at, because there's a lot of stuff in there that shows you.
Yes.
If you read it carefully, you will see people that got paid off, why they got paid off, what they got paid off. Well, they didn't get paid off with cash money. They got paid off with career influence.
And favors. Right.
Yeah,
yep. Favors.
Big time, though. Millions of dollars in career favors. And special favors and stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there, like 20 or 30 people who, at least, who are still alive, who know exactly what happened.
How do they keep this a secret?
The reason people say, well, you're writing this book to pay your daughter back for all the pain she caused you. No. I'm writing this book because Kurt Cobain was a beloved, shall we say, a victim, but he was also a kind of savior in a sort of a younger generation of young people who decided that they wanted to rethink what life was going to be like in America in the 90s and the turn of the century, the 21st century. So, here you got these young grunge kids, and they all, like, worship the guy, and then he dies, and somebody says he killed himself. They're all, like, traumatized.
Yeah.
There's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people who were angered and hurt and suicidal and cut themselves and did bad things and ruined their lives and decided not to do anything about, you know, because Kurt, quote, killed himself, unquote.
Yeah,
but
that's
Kurt,
so true, and I remember it well.
Kurt,
I watched it.
But Kurt,
I watched people.
But Kurt didn't kill himself.
Exactly.
So now those people have to rethink the mistakes they made because they believed the freaking media all those years, 20 years.
The media
they believed
and the radio, it was force-fed, and they...
What blows my mind is that all these people wanted to believe he killed himself because they didn't like him.
Not me.
And the reason they didn't like him is because he was go fuck yourself.
I know.
And I love
I know.
Him.
Well,
he was telling the man, "Hey, fuck off, man. You're the man. I'm not the man. I'm Kurt Cobain." And a lot of people were saying, "Oh, you mean you can tell the man go fuck yourself?" Yeah, Kurt was saying, "Yeah, you can tell him. You can tell them go fuck yourself because they're a bunch of assholes." David Geffen, all those guys, all that whole, now Harvey Weinstein, he's getting his shit right now because the women are telling him, "Hey, you can't touch me. You can't rape me." You know?
Yep.
And Kurt was ahead of the curve rape me.
Yep.
And he was telling people, "Hey, look at this. Look at this carefully." And now they are. And so that's why Kurt is important, and that's why my book is important.
That's why he's always been important, and that's what I knew that from day one. I mean, like, and I, you know, I don't like to see these people. They go off on this. Oh, Kurt was depressed. No, he wasn't. He was tough and he was funny, and he could reach people the way other people couldn't. They need to get
off
of the other part and remember him for who he was, not some fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just a guy
who discovered himself. He was a young, good-looking guy that discovered himself and found out he had a lot of talent. And Courtney was jealous of him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people along the way that have died that aren't here anymore that were aware of what was going on. That's the mystery that's one of the big mysteries of the book that I wrote, was why so many people haven't come forward and, you know, or because they're dead. So,
that's what I was
wondering. Yep. I mean, there's the people out there that if they know, I mean, there's ways to go about this where nobody's going to come down on you. You could tell your story. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if they know.
I do.
Yeah.
But here's the other reason. The police screwed up so badly, and they were so embarrassed that they caught themselves. A couple of cops that I talked to were saying that the Seattle police knew after the fact that Kurt was murdered, but and especially in regards to the El Duce murder, who's another guy that was thrown under the train, you know, literally thrown under the train. And so what I'm saying is there was a reason why all those people aren't talking.
Yep.
And their careers, if you look at their careers, you'll see that they're all very well off right now. Callie is a T-shirt manufacturer, and he's got an art gallery and field going.
Yeah, he's an artist.
Renee is doing this and that, and the other woman that I don't want to mention any names on the radio, but you read the books.
I pretty much got the picture.
Really,
on
at the
now,
top
I know
level of their career now, big time people with real big careers, big money coming every year, every month, and they're not going to say anything to screw that up. So my book is not a happy situation for a lot of people. And the reason, and that's why I want to tell your audience, I want to make sure we get this clear. The reason the book is not in the bookstores is because Courtney and all those people, not just Courtney, but all those people that knew about what happened would be down at the various bookstore distribution centers shutting the book down as fast as they could, if they could. So the only way you can get my book, is through me. You have to go through me to get the book. And I'm sorry, because I've had other books in bookstores before and it wasn't any problem. My dead book is still available in bookstores. And, I don't have anything against bookstores. It's just that in this particular book, the only way anybody's going to get this book is if they write in for it. And there's two ways. You can go to Amazon and buy it through them. Luckily, I don't know why Amazon's been nice to me. They didn't have to, but who knows? Get it now, because they may be stopped any day. But if that ever happens, you can still order it. And I want to give the information to people so that they can write in for it.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, what you do is you go online and you write a letter with your address in it to Love Kills Book. The whole thing. Love Kills Book at gmail.com.
Okay.
Love Kills Book at gmail.com. Love Kills Book at gmail.com. And send your, I want to get this book, and we'll send you all the information you need back. Double check that you're not a fake and that you're the real person. And then we'll charge you a little bit of money, and we'll give you the money to pay me back for, the money that we had to spend to get the book out. And then the rest of the money, any profits that we make, will go to producing against whoever killed Kurt to have the case reopened in Seattle, which I'm not in charge of. But there's several people that you know, and you could plug them, who are doing that at a list. Well, you're one of them. So That's important. Yeah. And the other thing is, when you go to Amazon, there's, unfortunately, there's about 5 books named Love Kills. Love Kills, you know, they've been out for years. I should have checked on it, but I didn't. I just thought this would be a cool book, cool title. It's Love Kills, The Assassination of Kurt Cobain is the name of the book. Love Kills, The Assassination of Kurt Cobain at Amazon. And you will eventually get through all the other Love Kills books, and you'll get to mine, and you could order it through Amazon for the time being. I don't know how long it's going to last, but we're hoping it will last a long time.
We're hoping.
Good news is we have 5 reviews, all 5 stars, and unsolicited. Yeah. I didn't ask them. And they read the book and said, I'm going to write in, and they gave a 5-star review. I'm going, wow, that's impressive. Thank you. I even impressed myself. So that book is available through Amazon and through lovekillsbook@gmail.com.
And it's very important.
Hank, I have a question.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm just curious. How do you think that all of these people were kept silent all these years? I understand the favors, and I understand that some are dead, but, I mean, how is it such a big cover-up? Wouldn't you think that somebody would slip at some point?
It's been a learning curve. I'll answer your question this way. It's been a learning curve for me, too. It makes it look like anybody that bad raps the suicide theory is an idiot.
They try to make you look crazy.
I've seen that. I have seen
a lot. And the evidence is there, but they don't want to look at it. But the people that believe it are smarter. There's a lot of really stupid people out there.
But I'm talking about with that many people in the house.
I really think they're naive. There's a lot of naive, innocent people out there that are being hoodwinked.
Right,
so,
but you
answer
said you know
question,
for a
to
fact
your question,
that people know.
I know people that know. And I'm personally absolutely stake my life on the fact that I'm convinced I'm right, or I wouldn't have put my whole heart and soul into this project.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just
to answer your question more specifically, it's a mystery how much power Courtney has. But I can I can answer your question more directly. This Courtney Love person has blackmail on all kinds of people that she's been messing with over the years, she got into orgies, she got into all kinds of scenes, quote unquote scenes in Hollywood. She made a lot of movies, you know, and she knows a lot of people. And she knows the proclivities of people. She's hanging out with people that wear the black and the red, devil worship people. I'm a Buddhist myself, but I've seen some pretty black magic stuff go down. And a lot of these people don't want that to be known to the general public. And Courtney knows all the inside dope. So,
and people listen.
And when I say dope, I mean dope.
Yep.
So when, you know, Sarah Bernhardt, she knows stuff on the producers of studios. She has stuff on David Geffen. She probably has stuff on Weinstein and others.
Yep.
List goes on. I don't even know who she knows, but I do know one can suspect that she knows a lot about a lot of people. And so they're not going to say anything, are they?
No, they wouldn't.
They know just how unstable Courtney can be. And if Courtney, if you've ever had Courtney go off on you, you don't want to experience that more than once. So, I'm not afraid of her. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
But there are people out there who have a lot to lose. We're so poor now, I can hear myself squeaking walking down the street, you know?
Me too.
There are rich people out there that could stand to lose a lot. Look what happened to Weinstein when the women came out after Weinstein recently. Just to give you some idea of how
I just keep picturing, yep, like you said, there were so many people in the house. There's so many people that were at the, you know, at the scene. I'm sure there's so many people who investigated it, police down, you know, going down the list that,
well,
you know, you would just think.
Okay, let's go down the list. Let's go to the cops at the top. The cops are embarrassed. They fucked,
yeah,
up. Nobody wants to,
yep,
you know, Tom Grant, before we stopped talking, Tom Grant told me something, mm-hmm, that I thought was very realistic. The reason the cops don't want to take on a lawsuit is because they might get sued themselves from, you know, parents of children who killed themselves and things
that's
like that. There were all kinds of kids that killed themselves and left,
yeah,
notes behind and said, I'm killing myself because, Kurt, I'll join you soon, Kurt, and things like that, right?
Yep.
Those people
so
all have a standing, they can go in and there's no statute of limitations on it. Those people can,
right,
go in and they can sue anytime. There's the El Duce people down in L.A. Not that they're going to sue, but they know stuff. They don't want to say anything. There's people who are big-time writers right now. There's one woman in particular that's in the book who is a big-time, very famous editor and writer and very, very powerful person, who was there at the time and knew exactly what went on in the house. And she vomited on the way to the airport, and they flew her out of town and got her out of there as fast as possible. And there's,
yep,
there's other people that are in there, mm-hmm, you know, like there's Callie's wife. It's just, mm-hmm, a whole long list of people that know exactly what's going on, and they're keeping their mouth shut because they fear Courtney.
Amazing,
yeah,
the power that one person can have.
It's,
yeah, when really,
Courtney,
see,
the
when
other thing
lose your money?
That people don't understand about Courtney is she's got 150 IQ. She's got photographic memory. She's a psychopath. And her mother is a brilliant genius. Her grandmother on her mother's side is a brilliant genius. I'm not stupid, and so forth. So Courtney has this, whenever she gets pissed off, she goes up to 250 IQ, you know, which is impossible. But when she's calmed down, she looks a little bit normal. She can look, when she's talking to somebody on TV or on the radio and doing an interview like this, she can sound fairly normal to most people. But believe me, man, when she's on the deep end, when she's off the deep end, man, she can get real nasty. So yeah, there's a lot of people that are afraid of her and they don't want to deal with her. So
yeah.
But,
I mean, like,
they're
just saying,
to answer your question, they're saying let sleeping dogs lie.
Yep.
And I'm saying no, don't let the sleeping dogs lie. Wake the freaking sleeping dog up, because there's a lot of people out there that need to have the dog barking.
Yep. We can save,
you know,
a lot of people.
I mean, that's the only way I can answer the question, really.
I see what you're talking about. Like, with the, I mean, I've been threatened 1, 2, 3 times already.
Absolutely, thank you.
Did that answer the question? I'm
yes,
sorry,
it did.
To get a
thank
word
you,
again.
Sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen, I was
thank
threatened 3 times. 3 times I've been threatened. The last one was a voicemail. And it's like, you know, I grew up with my dad in Atlantic City. I don't play that. You get what I mean? And, you know, the whole thing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I showed Dawn. Dawn knows. Dawn, right, Dawn?
Yep.
Dawn? Yep. You know.
Yes,
I mean, like, it's ridiculous to be threatened. Over what? They're like, you know too much. No, I don't. If I knew too much, I'd be sitting here. No, I'd be in the police station. You get my point here, Hank? You know right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I don't. You know what I mean? But in order to try to put the fear into anyone, And this is where Hank, he's completely 100% right. To the fear in anyone, they'll just pull their little trick. Okay? And this is how they
answer the question another way, too, that I think is important. Courtney
Real
has,
quick, guys, we have less than 5 minutes.
Okay.
Well, Courtney has
just
a bunch of boyfriends that she went, and they know about her, and there's several boyfriends that she grew up with in the book, and I think you should read those boyfriend articles in the book too, because they are, one of them is a very, very famous set designer in Hollywood, and he won't have anything to do with it, and he's a scared as hell. And so is Falling James Moreland, Falling James of Leaving Trains,
husband.
And all those
yeah.
people.
Yep.
So she's still bugging all those people. Okay, that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. Just think about that for a while.
We will.
Is there anything else you want to let anybody know before?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to repeat. If they want the book, they have to go to Amazon, or write me directly at lovekillsbook@gmail.com.
Okay, I put the link in.
You were fantastic. And thank you for coming on the show. We're going to have the archive up. Rob said probably later tonight. Okay, so when I get let know, probably tomorrow, I'll say
the
link over
to
you. Oh, good. That's fine.
Oh, and you're fine.
you sure in my mouth. Anyway,
we have
I'll
Alicia
get the link tomorrow. Yeah, I'll get the link tomorrow. You can share the link everywhere. We'll get this out so the people can hear it, too.
Thanks, Amelia, for having me on, and thanks for having the faith in the book. I really, finish reading please.
Oh, yes, I will. I'm going to.
Okay. All right.
Yes. All right. Thank you so
much.
Call
me anytime, man. Call me anytime.
I will. I will talk more.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
Hank, thank you so much for coming on. God bless you, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye. Dawn, that was a great show.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And,
wow, he's wonderful.
I know.
What a
smart
man.
Yes, he is.
Incredibly intelligent man.
I know, and I'm very nice and kind, and we need that, you know? But anyway, I'm going to get my dogs are barking. It's going to fit perfectly. All right. So
perfect
I'm gonna
timing.
Go, and I love you, Dawn, and much
I
love
you, too.
And, wait, peace, love, and empathy to everybody out in this audience.
That's
okay?
Right.
And
yep. We'll be back
and
on in 2 weeks.
Yes, we will. We're going to have a surprise show in 2 weeks, which is going to be another really good one. Okay? We'll be announcing that tomorrow. Okay?
All righty.
All right, Dawn.
Thank you,
good
Lisa.
Night.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison.
Love you.
All right. Love you, too.
Bye. Thank you, Nikki.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
good night.
Nikki.
Bye.